A mixed picture is emerging from the U.S. retail sector. On the doom and gloom side, Macy's. The stock was down nearly 20% in Thursday trading, on track for its biggest one-day loss ever. The department store retailer Thursday warned the all-important holiday shopping season was not as strong as it hoped, and brought down profit expectations for all of 2018.
A double-digit drop in demand in China and a dip in diesel sales across Europe. Triggers for Jaguar Land Rover, Britain's biggest carmaker, to cut thousands of UK jobs. A source told Reuters that management, research, sales and design posts would be affected, but not production, at least not yet.
Security workers and air traffic controllers at the nation's airports are sounding the alarm, saying security and safety could be jeopardized if a nearly three-week-old government shutdown doesn't end soon. The thousands of workers who staff control towers and security lines have been working with no pay since the start of the stalemate over President Trump's demand for a border wall. The controllers' union says their workforce had already been running at a 30-year low, the shutdown only adding to the strain.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's January 11th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in this morning to another edition of The Opening Bell, and we're getting underway here on another business day. We made it through, for a lot of us, the first full week of January with no days off, no holidays, so not bad, everybody. Good job. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today on Friday. As usual, Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. We've got a lot to talk to Paul about the economy and the markets and our portfolios, and we'll bring in Paul momentarily. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from Skift.com. You heard there in the opening montage concerns in the aviation world about the ongoing government shutdown and how it's going to affect air travel and how it already is affecting air travel in some places. We'll talk to Brian about that at about 5:40 this morning, so stay tuned for that. First on the WGN opening bell and Associated Bank market desk this morning, the bell rings on Wall Street later after stocks logged a fifth straight day of gains on Wall Street yesterday. All three major indices finished in positive territory despite the government shutdown and disappointing holiday sales from Macy's. This morning on the market board, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street, with Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures either down a fraction or up just a fraction, depending on which one you're looking at. In Europe, markets are mixed, with the markets in Germany and France lower, in London higher, and in Asia, the Nikkei is going to end the day up about 1%, 195 points, the Hang Seng up nearly 0.5%, and the Shanghai up nearly 3/4. Oil is trading at $53.04 a barrel, up nearly 0.75% or 44 cents. A couple of stories before we get going this morning. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says he doesn't see a recession coming this year. Powell spoke to the Economic Club in Washington, D.C. yesterday and said the U.S. economy is solid. Powell says the Fed's principal worry is growth in the global economy. He says it's a light, tightly integrated economy. Financial markets will see the effects of that. Powell also says he would be patient when determining whether to hike interest rates in response to strong U.S. growth or to pause rate hikes to account for global economic slowdown. He says inflation with inflation low and under control, we have the ability to be patient and see which of those two narratives is going to be the story for 2019. AT&T says it's going to stop selling customers' location data to third-party tracking services. Yesterday's announcement came after senators asked the FCC to investigate whether the sales violated people's privacy. Mobile carriers, including AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, have sold location data for legitimate services such as fraud prevention and emergency roadside assistance, but data buyers often abuse the practice to track people. AT&T will end all location data sales by March, when T-Mobile also will end the practice. Let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning, SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, for our regular Friday talk. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
I looked back at the week, and you know, it was relatively calm on Wall Street, wasn't it, for a change?
There were green signs all the way across the board for the entire week. The fears of last year and December and the last quarter are pretty well behind us now that we have the Fed at our back.
And I said things were calm. I should have said we're just in the green. It was really was a volatile trading session this week.
We did, and even yesterday was a 200-300 point swing in the market, and we continue to see big swings both on the up and down side. But the markets have finished on the plus side. So volatility is still here, but nobody really worries about it when ultimately the markets end higher. It's only when there's a negative sign that in front that people get nervous.
You say that the trouble is behind us. Is it permanently, or is this are we just in a period here?
Well, that's the million-dollar question at this point. And one of the things, I brought along a lovely chart, and I can hold it up to the microphone, and everybody can watch. But since 1945, we've had 13 of these types of moves where the markets have fallen by more than 15% in a quarter, as they did in the fourth quarter. And we've had a 10% bounce from the bottom. What happens next? And what we find is, with very few exceptions, the markets actually do very well a year from now. So they may go down and retest those lows or get close to them. But really, since 2009, the bottoms that we've had have been what we would call a V-bottom, where it just goes down, turns around, and then starts taking off again. But historically, it wouldn't be a surprise to see a little bit of backing and filling here as the markets kind of digest both trade, the government shutdown, earnings season will be starting next week. So there'll be plenty of things to be looking at. And maybe the markets trade sideways to down here a little bit, digesting all that news before they ultimately and should probably move higher.
Yeah, and that's something that we will hope happens. Obviously, we have some issues that are still out there and unresolved. Trade is one of them that's been impacting things. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell also talked about the potential for this government shutdown, if it goes on much longer, to start having a negative impact on the economy as well.
Yeah, and those are the trade issue, I think, is probably bigger. The government issue, I think, obviously, the longer it goes on, the more of a drag on the economy we're going to have. Ultimately, they will resolve the government shutdown in some fashion or another, and we'll get a residual bounce from that as everything gets picked up and payments are made and we get back to what passes for normal. So it's going to take us some time to do that. So we see that as more temporary. The trade issue has been ongoing now for well over a year. And we've seen some economic issues around that. Industrial production numbers down a little bit. The ISM data, the supply management data, is down a little bit. Investor sentiment is still actually pretty good, and sentiment around the economy is still very good. So the economic numbers that we look at, we're still projecting 2.5% GDP growth, which is what we've been experiencing really since 2009.
How long should we watch this government shutdown going to cause that negative issue? Is it a couple more weeks? Is it a couple of months?
Well, that's hard to say. I think, we're bumping up against the longest time that we've had a government shutdown. As I said, I don't think it's going to be a permanent shutdown. It can go on a while, but I don't think it's going to have a permanent impact on the economy. It will have a temporary impact. So whenever that ultimately gets resolved, we'll see that snap back. So it's not a permanent impairment, so I'm not too terribly worried about it. I'm more concerned about where we have permanent issues in the economy that can hurt us long term.
Paul, I want to go back real quickly to Jerome Powell. He is sort of saying, the Federal Reserve Chairman saying, he doesn't see a recession this year at all. That's positive news.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that we've talked about, in the lead up to the market decline, was that I think investors were anticipating a recession this year. And as we've talked about, we didn't really see it in the numbers. So I think the investors were kind of jumping the gun, anticipating more than what we were really seeing in the numbers, and led to, I think, part of that decline that we saw in December. But what was interesting with Jay Powell's comments, this goes back to actually last Friday, in being flexible and looking at the data, they're now becoming data dependent. And it was as though Jay was sitting with his predecessors, Janet Yellen and Ben Bernanke, and both of them counseling him on how to talk to financial markets. And since that time, the market has done very well, knowing now that the Fed is back and has investors back and won't let the markets fall, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, much more than 20%, and the Fed will stand at the ready.
I wouldn't doubt that. I wouldn't doubt that they had a conversation. They were on that stage doing that thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just, you know, after this show, they all went out for a cup of coffee and they had a little conversation.
You know, what's interesting, though, is this really has been a dynamic, and this is one of the things that we've looked at that goes back to Alan Greenspan, and this goes back to 1987, the crash of 87. At that time, Greenspan opened up the spigots and said, you know, we stand ready to provide whatever liquidity is necessary. And really, at that point, that started a Fed that has been very involved in the financial markets. You go back and look at the minutes, the amount of times that they reference financial markets, et cetera. You see a big pickup starting in the mid to late 80s with a focus on financial markets. So it's really been a dynamic at the Fed that's been going on for decades, and one that I think has maybe skewed, at least in the short run, some of the financial market movements.
Let's talk a little bit about retail. Yesterday's Macy's news and their drop on in shares and share price yesterday, along with JCPenney and Kohl's. Everybody said that the retail season was pretty good at Christmas time, but mm-hmm. here we have these companies that seemingly didn't do so well. What would you say is going on?
Well, I think you would take a look at the companies that they have and have nots, and a lot of the haves tend to be the online retailers and some of the discount places. Walmart had a pretty good season. Target, not too bad. And certainly Amazon did well. A lot of the big block stores, if you will, still continue to struggle. There's a lot of retail space. When you take a look at the total amount of retail space per person in the United States, it's significantly higher than it is in the rest of the world. So you can argue that we're still overstored for the amount of population that we have.
It is Friday, and Sears is still alive. Are you surprised that we're still talking about this liquidation plan not going forward and Eddie Lambert getting another chance to save the company?
Well, you know, it is his company, and he's done everything that he can to continue to be owner of the company, and I'm not quite sure from his perspective what he would do without Sears. So he's trying his best to make a go of it. Whether Sears is going to be able to stand or JCPenney anymore, you know, they may be continued casualties of the retail downsizing. We've seen a lot of stores disappear from the landscape. Toys R Us, certainly one last year that was highlighted. And I think we'll continue to see a shrinkage in the amount of stores, and especially the very large department stores. I think those are maybe a thing of the past.
The companies, the stores that did the shop online and pick up at the store routine this Christmas did very, very well. People seem to like that model.
Oh, they do, you know, because, it adds to the convenience. I don't have to wander around the store and figure out where it's at and which one do I want. And, you know, I can spend that time online figuring all that out. Point click and you know, put my bag together and then go to the store on my way home from the office or whatever and pick it up, and all is good. So
yeah. And a lot of cases have the clerk come to the car and meet you. You don't even have to go into the store.
Yeah. Right, especially when it's raining. Yeah. Right. It's a very convenient spot.
Paul, so what do we do with here at the end of the week? Are we buying in our portfolios? Are we looking for bargains, or what are we doing?
We've been buying. Over the last couple of weeks, we've slowly added to stocks. And as we've talked about the last couple of weeks, dollar cost averaging or just setting up a regular program to invest in the market, I think, makes sense. Whether we do have the market pull back here, we're in a spot right now which really kind of is a turning point or potential turning point for the market. This area here where the stock market is today roughly marks some of the bottoms that we saw before the markets fell apart in December. So investors may be selling as it gets close to their break-even level. So the opportunity for the market to go down 2-5% over the next few weeks or months is not out of the question. So it makes sense to stagger purchases. Where there are opportunities still, I think international emerging markets still make a lot of sense. Some of the technology names, Apple was one that we picked up here a little bit earlier in the week, down from over $200 down to $150. And I think even with the revenue issue that they have with China, I think it's still a very inexpensive stock at current levels based on its own history and can probably get back up to $200. So again, there are plenty of opportunities in the market, but I wouldn't go whole hog at this point. Have a little bit of powder dry over the next few months.
Right. My stack of hats, I think I'll pull the Dow 24,000 hat back out from the pile this morning.
We could be Dow 24,000, 25,000, 23,000. So, yeah, have a few ready, depending on the day of the week, time of the day even. We could be crossing one of those thresholds.
All right, very good. Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have this conversation one-on-one?
If they want to drop me a note, we can continue the conversation at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
Yeah, and make sure you sign up for Nolte's Notes as well and get that in your inbox every week. Good information.
Thank you very much.
All right, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago with us every Friday here on The Opening Bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. The government shutdown and its impact on the airline industry. How is it affecting you at the airport? How could it possibly be impacting safety? Let's bring in Brian Summers this morning. He's the senior aviation business editor for skiff.com and joins us from Los Angeles via Skype. Brian, let's begin on that. The government shutdown now pushing into, I believe it's 21st day. There has been some concerns about how this might be impacting aviation. What are you and your colleagues reporting about it there at Skift?
Well, Steve, the government shutdown is a mess for a lot of reasons, and it will probably get worse, of course, not just for aviation, but for a lot of other industries as well. The biggest thing that customers are seeing at airports is, anecdotally, a lot of people are reporting longer lines at TSA checkpoints. One reason for this is it seems that more TSA screeners than usual are calling in sick. This has been reported by some major news outlets, including CNN. TSA has pushed back on this a little bit. They say it's no big deal. They have plenty of screeners. But look, if you go to social media or you talk to people who have been at airports, they say, yes, the lines have been longer. It's not hard to figure out why more TSA screeners might be calling in sick or even might be quitting. They don't get paid a lot of money in the first place, and they're not getting paid during this government shutdown. It's tough work. It's a good private industry job market right now. Maybe some of others are saying, you know what, I didn't like this job in the first place. I'm not getting paid now. I don't know how long this is going to last, and I don't want to do it anymore. So hopefully the government can sort this out and these people can get paid. So that's probably the biggest thing. There's some things in the background as well. FAA inspectors apparently aren't working. That is a big deal. It will get to be a bigger deal as time goes on, and some other things as well.
Yeah, and the safety part of this is, I mean, there's one thing to wait in line a little longer to have your bag screened, to have safety inspections perhaps delayed is another. If this shutdown continues on for another couple of weeks or months, I mean, this could become very serious in that regard, couldn't it?
It could, Steve, although I have to tell you that all of the major airlines take safety very seriously. As we've said before on this program, the airlines say that safety is their number one priority, and I 100% believe them, if only because they're smart enough to know that if they're seen by the public as an unsafe airline, people won't want to fly them. They'll eventually go out of business. So airlines have very robust safety programs internally. Of course, it's very helpful to have the FAA inspecting, auditing, doing things like that. But I do trust the airlines in terms of safety, and I think people should feel comfortable flying on airplanes for a long time.
There was a story out of Michigan over the last week where there was a plane crash, a small plane crash. The National Transportation Safety Board says it would wasn't responding immediately to that because of the government shutdown. For the NTSB not to be out investigating accidents seems to be like another big deal.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, as you say. Again, this thing has got to get sorted out, but it affects many more industries than aviation.
Brian, I want to switch gears a little bit here, and I know you've been writing about Sun Country Airlines. The headline says, inside America's most unusual airline. Why is it so unusual?
Well, Sun Country is unusual for a few reasons. One of them is it's very, very small. Sun Country only has about 30 airplanes, which makes it America's smallest mainline airline, and those are airlines that fly larger jets. They have had this reputation over the years of being a Minnesota airline based in Minneapolis. They carry a lot of very nice people from Minnesota to sunny destinations all over North America, into the Caribbean, things like that. You know, that hasn't been the most profitable niche for them, and they were recently bought by a private equity firm. They got some capital, and they are expanding now beyond Minneapolis. So they're flying from, you know, all over the United States. Amazingly enough, with only 30 airplanes, they're flying Los Angeles to Honolulu, San Francisco to Honolulu, Las Vegas to Anchorage. They're flying from Dallas-Fort Worth to the Caribbean. And none of this makes any sense, really, if you think about a cohesive strategy. But I was in Minneapolis a few weeks ago. I talked to the CEO, and the strategy is pretty much this, Steve. We will go into any route where we think that we can make money. So they don't really have traditional hubs. If they think that they can only make money in a route flying it 3 months a year, that's what they'll do. If they think they can make money 6 months a year, they'll do that. So they just go where the money is. Operationally, of course, that's a little bit challenging, but somehow they say that they can make it work.
Yeah, and in your story, you've actually written about some of the snags so far. Have they been significant? Are they stopping the progress here, the forward momentum at all?
So, Steve, they have had some snags. The biggest one happened, I think, in mid-2017. They actually stranded a lot of passengers in Mexico. There was a freak snowstorm in Minneapolis. The airline had no way to pick up the travelers, and they basically said to people in Los Cabos and Mazatlan, sorry, you're on your own if you want to get back. That was a real hit to the airline. They've mostly recovered from that, but it was a big deal at the time. If you're an airline, you send people to a foreign country, you have to find a way to get them back somehow in a way that makes them feel good. This was, you know, a year and a half ago, and they are recovering from it. But as they expand nationwide, they're going to have to make sure that they have a way to take care of their customers.
Are we going to see Sun Country in Chicago?
You are going to see Sun Country in Chicago, but you're not getting one of those really exciting routes, say Chicago to Los Cabos or something like that. You are only getting Chicago to Minneapolis. I believe it's a seasonal route, but you can fly onward from Minneapolis, and their fares are usually pretty good. I mean, one of the ways that Sun Country is going into Dallas and Los Angeles and San Francisco, where they have zero name recognition, is they are just the cheapest fare in the market. So you go on kayak.com, you're looking to fly from LA to Honolulu, you see that United cost a fortune, you don't want to fly them. Then you see another airline show up on Kayak, you've never heard of it, but boy, it's cheap, and so you book it, and that's what they're banking on.
Brian, finally here, I want to talk a little bit about Herb Kelleher, the founder, former co-founder and longtime CEO at Southwest Airlines. When you mentioned big names in the airline industry, pioneer names, Kelleher would certainly be one of those, wouldn't he?
Yeah, Herb, as people call him in the industry, was certainly an iconic figure. People have been praising him since he died at the age of 87 last week, and he certainly deserves it. I mean, he created an airline that was really just a Texas airline, flying among three cities in Texas, and turned it into the largest air in the United States. And he was a colorful figure, as I think people know. He drank a lot of whiskey, and smoked a lot of cigarettes, including apparently in a bunch of places he wasn't supposed to smoke. He just did it anyways. I'm relatively new on this beat. He retired from Southwest, I think, in 2008, so I never covered him. But I've heard a lot of great stories about him. And, you know, things would be a lot different now. There might not be low-cost carriers in the same way that there are now if Herb hadn't come along and transformed the industry. And one of the interesting things about Southwest is, as people know, they've essentially stayed what they always were. So a lot of times as an airline grows, you know, they want to have bigger airplanes, they want to fly to Europe, they want to fly to Asia, they certainly want to have first class, and Southwest still has none of that. They have an all-coach cabin, everyone gets treated pretty much the same. They did expand a little bit to the Caribbean and Mexico. They're going to go to Hawaii, but they're essentially the same as they always were, and they still fly only 737s. It's pretty cool what they've been able to do with that airline.
All right, Brian, thank you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift, skift.com, at Skift on Twitter. And make sure you follow Brian as well, at Brian Summers. And also sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report that's delivered to your inbox. You can find that at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures are off just a fraction. Markets are generally mixed in Europe and Asia. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson this morning for a conversation about markets, agriculture, commodities. Good morning, Orion. How are you?
Well, good morning, Steve. I'm doing fine and hope you all are too. We're working again today from WGN West in Scottsdale, Arizona. And today, something is not going to happen that was anticipated for months, because today was the day that the U.S. Department of Agriculture was supposed to issue several important reports, including crop production figures, the final ones for the crop year in 2018. But because of the partial government shutdown, that will not happen today. And no word yet on when we will get those reports. The crop production, grain stocks, supply and demand, winter wheat seedings reports will not be released today. And so we'll keep that in mind. But other things happening today, the 100th anniversary convention, the centennial of the American Farm Bureau Federation, gets underway today in New Orleans, Louisiana. About 6,000 Farm Bureau members from across the country will be in the Big Easy for that convention to determine policy for the upcoming year. And then in the overnight grain trade, we're looking at March wheat up 5.5 cents a bushel, March corn up 2.25 cents, January soybeans up 2 cents a bushel in the overnight trade.
Orion, I wanted to ask you more about how the government shutdown is affecting agriculture. Are there any other significant issues going on there? I heard that the SNAP is going to be SNAP funds are going to be available, I think, through February. That's off the concern table. What else might be impacting agriculture?
Well, there'll be some work on payments due farmers because of the trade and tariff war that we've gone through. And I think those will be put on hold because they don't have money for them. But what will be done, the livestock inspections will continue. The food safety issues will continue to make sure that foods that get to the supermarket and to my dinner table and your dinner table will be safe. So I think really the payment picture is the one that's going to be affected also, because they don't have funds. As a matter of fact, I think some members of Congress yesterday tried to pass a rule that said USDA would be open to do the funding on various programs and rural development programs, but haven't seen anything final or definite on that yet. So it'll continue to overshadow a lot of activity from various government agencies, and U.S. Department of Agriculture is one of those big agencies.
Yeah, and you mentioned the reports there. From a real-world standpoint, how important are those to what happens on the trading floor every day.
Well, very important, because the final crop production figures for 2018, and of course this comes out every year at this time, and those are looked at for making plans, really. It could affect how many acres we plant to corn, how many to soybeans in the coming year. So that information, along with grain stocks, is very important to the market. And speaking of reports, we did get another report from Brazil and their crop production, a firm called CONAG, which estimates Brazil's crops for the year, came out yesterday and dropped the estimated production of soybeans considerably. They said the soybean crop will come in at 118.8 million tons, and that's a drop from their previous estimate of 120 million tons. So apparently they're having weather problems in Brazil that are doing more than just drying the fields briefly. They're now waiting for some rain in the major soybean-producing areas of Brazil.
Orin, I saw something that sort of jumped off the page at me this week. The folks over at Purdue Commercial Ag and CME Group, they do their ag barometer every month. And part of this report this month talked about whether now is a good time to bring on board a new generation into family farming. Just 4 in 10 farmers said yes. That seems like a really surprisingly low, almost shockingly low number.
Well, I think part of it, Steve, is the fact that with the commodity prices where they have been, it is tough to bring a kid out of college where he's gotten the education for whatever agricultural commodity he wants to deal in, and tough to generate enough income, I think, to pay for two families and support two families or three families, whatever the number of people would be. And so I think that is a challenge and will continue to be a challenge, because it's not a cheap venture today to get into agricultural production.
All right. What's on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, we're going to be talking markets. And the thing about the U.S.-China trade talks last week, traders are very, concerned that we're not getting sales to China. They were expecting we'd get sales immediately. We got some in December, but some of the traders are disappointed that we haven't seen new sales to China and that they haven't been large sales that we had in December. So we'll be talking about that continued impact. As I said yesterday, okay, the trade talks are over. What's next? And I guess we'll wait to see in the marketplace.
All right, very good. We'll be listening. Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. The morning show from 5 to 6 tomorrow morning right here on 720 WGN. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, January 11th. Not a lot on the calendar today. The Consumer Price Index for December is due this morning, and economists are forecasting a slight monthly decline. They're calling for a 0.1% drop in inflation from November and a 1.9% rise for all of 2018. Also on the calendar today, a couple of earnings and economics. The Canadian cannabis company Freena will release earnings today before we start really getting into more corporate earnings coming up next week and the week after. So really a quiet week, quiet day today in terms of the economic reports that could potentially move the markets.